This is a new day for New York 19.
Where is the good officers at? If 11 of them is no damn good, we want to know where the good ones at.
I believe the goal is beating Donald Trump.
Watch your
tongue. What do you mean? She just called me names.
So I don't give a f- she spoke the truth.
Whoa, look at that. There's a beaver 5 feet from us. Usually they whack their tails on the water and try to scare you off. That was a pretty brave beaver.
We've learned some tough lessons, and those lessons are we have to hold people accountable.
Hello again, it's Ian Pickus, WAMC News Director. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we're covering the race for Albany County Comptroller, the casino industry in Massachusetts, an imperiled pension fund that could affect 1,100 retirees, and a leadership change atop the New York State Republican Party. Yeah, we made this episode a little longer for you Memorial Day weekend travelers and loungers. Anyway, first, some sad news to share. The WAMC family has lost a member. Longtime film commentator Rob Edelman, a mainstay of our programs, has died after a short illness. No matter how well you knew Rob Edelman, two things were immediately apparent when he was nearby. He liked baseball, and he liked movies. Walking through the WAMC studios to record his commentary, Edelman would usually be wearing either a baseball hat or shirt, often his hometown Brooklyn Dodgers, and on his way to London or the Toronto International Film Festival, or a baseball conference in the Southwest. After the World Series, he'd start the countdown to pitchers and catchers. Those passions defined his decades of teaching, writing, and research.
The Ruins of Lifta is a complex film, one that deals with a multitude of issues relating to Israelis and Palestinians, or Jews and non-Jews.
It became clear that it is a tale of bureaucrats and bureaucracy on the one side, and concerned and worried citizens on the other.
I love the theme that if you try to be an individual, society will crush you. Kirk Douglas has tried to be an individual, and he has not been crushed. Rather, he has triumphed.
Edelman, who taught courses on the history of film at the University at Albany, was a contributing editor of Leonard Maltin's Movie Guide. Among his books are Great Baseball Films and Baseball on the Web, as well as Mathau, A Life, Angela Lansbury, A Life on Stage and Screen, and Meet the Mertzes, which he wrote with his wife Audrey Kupferberg, also a WAMC film commentator. As recently as February 2018, the two kept an annual tradition alive by discussing the upcoming Oscars on WAMC's Vox Pop program.
I'm betting on Lady Bird.
Now, why the disagreement, Rob, over Lady Bird?
It's just a matter of opinion. Ultimately, you see a film, you like it, you dislike it. You may like it. We could both like a film, but again, for very different reasons.
A hallmark of Edelman's film reviews was the joy he found in both well-made blockbusters and little-seen treasures. Telling the listeners a particular project, even a flawed one, was well worth seeing, could often count as an Edelman rave. And as a viewer, he was prolific, bringing four or five new reviews with him to a recording. Edelman was also a member of the Society for American Baseball Research, and as he said in 2018 while promoting his latest book, From Spring Training to Screen Test, Baseball Players Turned Actors, quote, I love baseball and I love film. Always have, always will. On behalf of WAMC and its listeners, we'll miss Rob's insights on both topics and more. After 3 years leading the Water of Elite New York Police Department, Chief Mark Spain is stepping down at the end of May to become a public safety sergeant at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in neighboring Troy, his hometown. The 50-year-old joined the now 26-officer department in 1998. Spain, who took over a force that experienced issues with officer misconduct and with public trust, says he tried to increase the department's transparency. Spain says the search for an acting chief for the city in Albany County will include internal and external candidates. A press conference outside Albany City Hall this week morphed into a confrontation inside between two candidates for county comptroller. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas reports.
In January, Albany City Treasurer Darius Shanfar announced a run for the Albany County Comptroller's post being vacated by Mike Connors, who is retiring at the end of the year. Within 24 hours, first-term Albany Chief City Auditor Susan Rizzo announced she too would run. A month before the pivotal Democratic primary, Rizzo held a press conference on the sidewalk outside City Hall, trying to draw attention to what she characterized as the pattern of fiscal mismanagement at City Hall.
The Office of Audit and Control has completed 6 audits, which have been posted to the department's website. A 7th, a recent $26 million serial bond issuance for the purchase of the city's streetlights, has been completed. Departmental response was received late last night for a review and comment. This 6-page response was posted on Facebook before it was reviewed by OAC and before the Office of Audit and Control even had a chance to respond. What has been uncovered is a pattern of financial mismanagement. My team of qualified professionals has helped recover or point out over $1 million in either missed opportunities from poor cash management or direct cost savings by way of refunds to the city or decrease expenses going forward.
Rizzo's words didn't sit well with Shanfar. One of his campaign people invited reporters inside to speak with him. Rizzo wanted in as well.
I'm the chief city auditor.
You know
I'm not going to be excluded. Sorry.
Please.
Nope. Rizzo stood her ground, refusing to leave. Shanfar criticized Rizzo's streetlight bond audit, saying its conclusions were erroneous and a tremendous waste of time. He added the city made the right decision in bonding early.
We had to make sure that we got the best interest rate possible, which is why we explained repeatedly over the term of this streetlight purchase why we were trying to get this bond authorization authorized early and why we wanted to go out to bond early. We also didn't know necessarily whether or not we were going to receive the $12 million from the state. And if we don't receive the $12 million from the state or a portion of that, and when we received a portion of that, what would that do to interest rates? They would spike at that point too. So interest rates determined when we went out to bond. And whether or not the deal closes this month, next month, the month after that, we're still, the savings are the same. We don't pay off anything in the bond until starting next year. And the bond will be paid off earlier at the end of the term.
He added the city got a good interest rate of 2.83%. Initial estimates were 3.15 to 3.25%. Shanfar says circumstances have led to his office and Rizzo's communicating via email.
They've been particularly nasty and conclusory in many occasions.
After interviews concluded, Shanfar bristled as a Rizzo campaign aide accused Shanfar of keeping 2 sets of books. He then ordered the aide, Anton Konev, out of the office. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan's chief of staff, Brian Shea, commented on the dust-up via email, writing, quote, "It is extremely frustrating trying to respond to someone who has no formal audit training or credentials and who has seemingly no interest in understanding long-established government auditing standards. We will continue to urge the city auditor to seek the proper training, as her predecessor did, so that she can effectively do the job the people of Albany pay her to do." The Democratic primary is June 25th. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
The Massachusetts State Senate has finalized its version of the state's 2020 budget. State Senator Adam Hines, the Democrat who represents Berkshire, Hampshire, Franklin, and Hamden counties, says the budget has around $370,000 in funding for the Berkshire Flyer pilot project that would establish rail service between New York City and the Berkshires in summer 2020, as well as more funding for emergency shelters and other projects. The budget now moves to conference committee and is due to the governor by the end of June. While relative calm has returned to the burgeoning casino industry in Massachusetts after a week of uncertainty, it was all triggered by word that MGM Resorts International and Wynn Resorts were in talks about the sale of Wynn's yet-to-open Boston-area casino. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill has more.
The top executive of Encore Boston Harbor told the Massachusetts Gaming Commission this week the $2.6 billion casino that Wynn Resorts built will open to the public next month as scheduled.
We'll be ready to go on June 23rd at 10 a.m.
Encore Boston Harbor President Bob DeSalvio's comments came hours after MGM Resorts announced it had broken off talks with Wynn about buying the casino. It was just a week ago the two casino industry titans said their respective CEOs had held, quote, very preliminary, unquote, discussions about a possible sale. Because Massachusetts law does not allow a company to hold more than one casino license in the state, if MGM purchased the Wynn property in eastern Massachusetts, it would have to divest the $960 million casino it opened just last August in downtown Springfield. The mega deal would have been subject to approval by the Gaming Commission and local officials in both Springfield and Everett, the city north of Boston where the Encore Casino was built, on a once badly polluted industrial site along the Mystic River. Could such a deal have been pulled off?
Could have been done, but it would have been a difficult, both from an economic and a political point of view.
Clyde Barrow, head of the Political Science Department at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley and a gaming industry specialist, noted that reports surfaced more than a year ago that MGM was interested in buying the Boston area casino. At the time, Wynn was facing the possible loss of its Massachusetts license over sexual misconduct allegations about founder Steve Wynn.
If you look at the performance of new resort casinos that have opened in the Northeast recently, they've just dramatically underperformed their original forecasts and revenue projections. I think Wynn is taking a look at this and realizing the Encore Boston Harbor is not going to be the facility they originally expected it to be. And yet they have $2.6 billion invested in it. I doubt that MGM was willing to pay any place close to that amount and probably just could not reach a deal on the price.
In announcing the breakoff of talks with Wynn Resorts, MGM acknowledged the, quote, anxiety the discussions had caused among local and state officials. During a visit to Springfield Tuesday, Governor Charlie Baker made his concerns known.
We don't want to see anything happen with respect to either MGM's position here or Wynn's position in Everett that creates a significant disruption for either community. I mean, people put a lot of time, effort, money, resources, and lost opportunity into ensuring that both the MGM casino in Springfield would go up and that the and be operational and that the Wynn facility would go up. And people are going to expect that those commitments are honored.
The host community agreement between MGM and Springfield protects the city financially if MGM were to sell that Springfield casino, according to Mayor Dominic Sarno.
If something does occur, I'm in a good position of leverage with the Gaming Commission that nothing can occur that will not benefit the city of Springfield without my okay and the Mass Gaming Commission's okay.
MGM's hotel casino complex is the largest single property taxpayer in Springfield to the tune of about $17 million a year. Additionally, MGM is obligated to pay millions more into reserve funds for public safety and community improvements. The casino operator is also committed to employ 3,000 people throughout its facility, with Springfield residents constituting at least 35% of the workforce. Aside from the jobs and revenue, MGM is also being counted on to use its clout in the entertainment industry to transform Springfield's nightlife and entertainment scene. Sarno said any other casino operator would be hard-pressed to deliver what MGM can.
My choice would be, obviously, to keep MGM. Again, the world-renowned. We wanted the best, and we received the best.
In its first year, MGM brought Stevie Wonder and Cher to Springfield and booked Aerosmith for four shows this August. MGM operates the MassMutual Center, the state-owned arena and convention center in downtown Springfield. The city is negotiating with MGM to take over management of Symphony Hall. In January, MGM partnered with the Springfield Thunderbirds to bring the AHL All-Star Game to Springfield, the first time the city had hosted that event in 60 years. Reporting from Springfield, this is Paul Tuthill at WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University.
In New York, the state attorney general is now investigating the collapse of a hospital retirement fund in Schenectady. Two state lawmakers have filed legislation intended to get answers. WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard reports.
Earlier this month, Republican State Senator James Tedisco and Democratic State Assemblyman Angelo Santabarbara introduced legislation to halt the dissolution of the St. Clair's Hospital Corporation until an investigation is completed to determine how the hospital's pension fund collapsed. St. Clair's Hospital, with ties to the Catholic Church, closed in 2008 under financial pressures. The hospital was shuttered after a mandate from a state panel known as the Berger Commission. Renamed the McClellan Street Health Center, the site of the former hospital in Schenectady is now run by Ellis Medicine. When the hospital was closed, New York State paid $50 million to St. Clair's, with more than $28 million intended to meet the needs of the hospital's pension fund. A decade later, the St. Clair's Hospital Corporation is seeking dissolution from the state Supreme Court. But the lawmakers say not so fast. State Senator Tedisco of the 49th District.
So we want to know how they spent that $28.5 million before the court says, yeah, you can shut this down and leave all these pensioners out in the cold.
The Senate version of the bill to delay the issuance of a certificate of dissolution until the state health department, attorney general, or comptroller's office investigates the collapse of the pension fund and whether or not there was any wrongdoing is moving through committee. But lawmakers are set to leave Albany in June for the year. Assemblyman Santa Barbara, a Democrat of the 111th, said in a statement he was pleased that Attorney General Tish James is looking into what happened to the retirement fund. He said, quote, more than 1,100 retirees were told that they will receive no pension. They deserve to know why, end quote. The Attorney General's office is arguing the hospital corporation did not provide proper financial paperwork as it applies for dissolution. In February, pensioners, including Mary Hartshorne, met with Senator Tedisco, Assemblyman Santa Barbara, and Bishop Edward Scharfenberger of the Albany Diocese to advocate for a solution. Here's Hartshorne speaking at a press conference following the closed-door meeting.
It's important for people to know that we worked so hard for this for years and years, and we deserve it.
Tedisco says he and Santa Barbara are still looking for answers. Richard Azzopardi, a spokesman for Governor Andrew Cuomo, told WAMC, quote, we support the Attorney General's investigation and await its results while we review potential legislative remedies, end quote. For WAMC News, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
A controversial jail complex project in New York's Hudson Valley will be reduced in both size and cost. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro met with the New York State Commission of Correction this week. Molinaro cited state bail reform initiatives that go into effect January 1st, along with the county's diversion programs, as reasons to be able to cut down on the size and cost of the planned Dutchess County Justice and Transition Center. Molinaro says the Commission of Correction agreed to push back final design plan approval to the end of the year. He says the redesign would reduce the new facility size by about 100 beds and save the county as much as $8 million in construction costs and reduce annual operational costs by as much as $2.5 million. And there's change atop the New York State Republican Party. Erie County GOP Chair Nick Langworthy has gathered the support of the majority of county chairs and will replace Ed Cox in July. The two met with reporters this week in Albany to talk about the transition. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
On the surface, it's an amicable change of leadership. Ed Cox, who oversaw the party for the past 10 years and is the son-in-law of former President Richard Nixon, says he's pleased with his new position as part of a team to help finance President Trump's re-election effort.
I am somehow attracted to the presidential elections.
Under Cox's tenure, the party did not win an election for statewide office. Republicans have not held a major statewide elected office since 2006, when former GOP Governor George Pataki decided not to seek a fourth term. Last November, Republicans lost by a significant margin their hold on the state Senate. It now has just 23 GOP members compared to the 38 in the Democratic Leadership Conference. Despite that, Langworthy did not criticize Cox or his leadership skills, and he thanked him for his dedication to the party. Langworthy instead spoke of a game plan to grow the GOP in New York, and he promised to show a new fighting spirit, starting with the state Senate races next year.
We lost this majority in one election. I think we can gain this majority back in one election.
Senator Michael Gianaris is chair of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee and helped oversee many of the Democratic senators' victories last November. He does not give the GOP much of a chance in making gains in 2020.
He's half right. They did lose the election.
where he's wrong is the possibility that they might take it back. We have a historically large Democratic majority, more than in the last 100 years, and we're expecting a huge Democratic vote in 2020 in response to President Trump being at the top of the ticket.
Republicans face an uphill battle to win seats in New York. President Trump is deeply unpopular in the state. GOP membership in New York has been in decline for decades. Langworthy, who worked for former Western New York Congressman Tom Reynolds and supported Carl Paladino for governor in 2010, says he knows that his first task is boosting enrollment in the Republican Party. But he says he sees a path to winning races, and it's based on economic issues like lowering taxes in the state, which are among the highest in the nation. He says that strategy has been successful in winning several recent elections in Erie County, where Republicans are outnumbered. And Langworthy says President Trump is much more popular than people think.
This is going to be a pocketbook election, and the Trump economy is on fire.
The new GOP chair says his ultimate aim, though, is to mount a serious challenge to Democrats for the governor's race in 2022.
My mission and goal is to get us to the point where a Republican occupies the second floor of the state capitol.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, has not said whether he intends to seek a fourth term as governor, but he is actively raising money for his campaign fund. A senior advisor to Cuomo, Rich Azzopardi, is skeptical of the GOP's chances.
Using Ed Cox's same tire talking points is a great way for a new beginning for the party. That's been their goal for the last 20 years. My goal is also to be taller and a shortstop for the Mets.
Langworthy, at 38, will be the youngest GOP chair in state history. He says he plans to get younger people and women more involved in the party and wants to make it more ethnically diverse. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. And when you donate to WAMC, you help us continue making podcasts just like this. Remember, the lockbox is open at WAMC.org and the fund drive starts June 3rd. Have a great holiday, and until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.